For the first question is just like writing the Lagrangian and then deriving the Hamiltonian and then changing to action variables. The system is like, we suppose we have the sun here. We have an elliptical orbit around it where we have like some asteroid going around. And then we have, so this is the sun. And this is the asteroid. And this, let's suppose here, is Jupiter. So if we want to write the Lagrangian, it's actually T minus U, where T is a half of mv squared, and U is minus m, minus g, the mass of the asteroid, the mass of the sun, divided by the distance between the asteroid and the sun. Here, R is not a fixed radius, because like we have an elliptical orbit, so it varies. We can write.
Is the sign correct then?
So it's minus and minus becomes plus. I'm not. Yes, it becomes plus. It's like I wrote them separated earlier. Anyways, so we can write V in polar coordinates and becomes half of M. So, wow. So this one in polar, V can be written as the square root of R dot plus R square theta dot square, and even the R here is square. So for squared, it becomes like R dot squared plus R theta dot squared. All right, so to define the momentums P theta and P R, we have P theta as dl per d theta dot, which is m r squared theta dot, and PR is MR dot. So now to define the Hamiltonian. So H is the sum of I, Q, I dot, PI minus L, which is PR, R dot, plus P theta, theta dot, minus the Lagrangian, which is this one. So if we replace PR and P theta by the values, we get a half of M R dot squared plus a half of M R squared theta dot squared minus G small m, this mass of the sun divided by R. And then we can say that this one is equals to PR squared over 2m plus B theta squared over 2mr squared over radius. Okay, so the Hamiltonian action variables is given by H equals to JR omega R plus J theta omega theta. Should I go to the middle there? So, yeah.
Is that all there is?
No, I'm still can. What do you mean?
Okay, no, it's just JR omega R plus J theta omega theta?
Yes, that's what you gave us in the lectures.
Right, I guess. No, I think this minus should be minus Lagrangian.
Nope, it's not minus Lagrangian. And then I'll give you the definition of, like,
okay.
I got the right answer for this question, so I'm sure. So I'm sure that's correct. Yeah, with so with JR is equals to 1/2 pi PR DR,
right.
And G theta is 1/2 pi B theta D theta.
So
it's supposed to be minus L?
I think so.
That's not what I have in the lectures either.
Well, I guess I'm not sure. Maybe that's what happened in the planet.
The action angle variables aren't supposed to contain theta. So because JR and J theta, they corresponding angle,
they don't. Yeah, but there is no dependence on angle all along.
Right. Exactly.
It's going to be the case.
Right, let's see what
I'm going to get.
Maybe
okay.
I think that's simplifying it. Like you actually already included the Lagrangian there. Q isn't.
But yeah, so I'm going to try.
Okay, so I'll start by calculating J theta, which is, as I said, 1/2 pi contour integral of B theta D theta, which is equals 1/2 pi contour integral of M theta dot R squared D theta. What am I saying?
So since
yeah,
it is cyclic, you don't even need that second step.
This one? Yeah, I know. You can just you can say it's from 0 to 2 pi of this.
Oh,
I was gonna do it in another step.
No, but I'm saying that the internal thing is just a constant, so you can just say that's equal to some value.
Sure, yeah, but I'm going so very small steps, so it's okay. If you get it, okay. I'll give you the final result. No need for me to go step by step. Well, this one is going to give m theta dot r squared, which is p theta. Now, the problem is to calculate gr, because there is a dependence on r. So here, to get the expression of R, we isolate it from this Hamiltonian. So we'll have PR.
So I don't have this in the lectures. So I guess what I have is partial H by partial J is omega.
I don't have my lectures with me.
That's fine. I mean, this is, sorry, but maybe I think maybe omega is theta dot is ds by dj. That's what in the lecture.
Yeah, but the question there is what's the expression of Hamiltonian in terms of these two?
Right.
So you don't have it as minus Lagrangian either, right?
Well, I haven't written it down here.
Sure.
Yeah, right. But I'm saying I haven't.
We don't need that expression. Yeah, because
like
one
that
would
expression
get
is necessary.
GR and G theta will be
yes.
Variable.
Sure.
H and
right.
Theta. So we replace them in what we already have.
Yeah.
Of course. Although you might be right, and it might be an L there, because this formula, I just used it for like to define the omega r and omega theta later. So somehow
that's probably the misunderstanding. So if omega and omega are constant, then of course then the partial h by partial j gives you omega, but then omega themselves depend on j.
Yes.
So those two are not equivalent. So partial h by partial j is omega,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't mean that h is the sum of j times omega.
So. Sure. Like let's say. Okay. So for PR. Contour integral of square root of 2m times the energy minus p theta squared over r squared plus 2j so to calculate this thing, I use the residue theorem.
The residue theorem,
it's a contour integration that you can solve with the residue theorem.
Okay.
So, should I get the results? That's all? Or? Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. So, yeah, well, no need to give a lot of.
No, just give the answer, yeah.
Sure, that would be like perfect. Okay, so JR is 1 over 2 pi of, no, not. Yeah, it's 1 over 2 pi times.
No, it's actually, I'm curious to see how you did that.
You'll find it in my assignment if you want.
Well,
like,
see.
Are you guys interested? It is, yeah.
Because they integrate out, so that's a contour integral. We take this, we take P as a function of R. We need to integrate in this if you are one or two.
So.
But that function are, but actually the poles of that thing are one and two. No, sorry. Yeah.
Are zero infinity.
Cut in between the two.
But maybe, I mean, so you guys have both done it using residue theorem? Or?
No, I'm the only one who did residue theorem.
So why don't you just draw where the residues are and where the branch cuts are?
What do you mean?
Well, how you did it?
I checked how many poles do I have in the function, and I got two poles. And
where are the poles?
Well, actually, you have one pole at r equals to zero, but the r equals to infinity 2 is a pole that you need to add it. That is a theorem that I found somewhere online. So when I added it, I got like the perfect answer. So it's a kind of a cheating to get it. But like, yeah, well, I don't know. Analytically, if you do the calculations by hand, it's going to take you a while to get it fixed. But since you said you can, what?
I don't understand why using the residue theorem works. Because we don't keep thinking the poles in our domain of integration.
Yeah, they're outside. So if you, like, let's suppose you have at r equals to zero here, you take any kind, you can keep outside the r, and you fix your radius, whatever you want to call it, and then your infinity is going to be outside too. So both of them are outside. Yes. So that works.
Okay.
what is the contour? You have R1 and R2 that are the radius
poles
between terminals and the pipe.
Yes.
And that contour contains those two things.
No, it doesn't.
No, it should be outside. Yes.
That function is an analytic.
So there is a branch cut. So there are two places where that square root vanishes. There's a branch cut that connects. I mean, you could either do it the two branch cuts that go out to infinity, or there's a branch cut that connects these two points where that thing vanishes. Because of that. Whenever you have a square root of something that could vanish, then you would have the branch cut coming out of where the argument of a square root vanishes.
Overall, though, I think.
Well, I think
there is way of simpler ways of doing it. I just chose a complicated way. I know.
But as long as you get the right answer.
Yeah, I got my answer matches with the book that I showed you last time, so normally it should be correct. Yeah. So I'll give you just the result for that. So it's the integral or calculating that one will give minus 2 pi p theta plus 2 pi j g, mass of the sun, and then the mass of the asteroid squared divided by the square root of minus 2 pi, 2 m, e. So that will be written as g m of the sun, mass squared, per minus 2 m e, minus p theta. And p theta is actually g theta, that as we calculated from there. So we can just write it as j theta. And this is jr. From here, we isolate for e, which is the Hamiltonian, actually. And it gives us minus g squared, mass of the sun squared, mass of the asteroid cubed divided by 2, jr plus j theta, all squared. And that is our Hamiltonian in action variables. And if we want to calculate our omega r and omega theta. So omega r is the derivative of the Hamiltonian per with respect to gr, which will give us g squared, mass of the sun squared, mass cubed per jr plus j theta cubed. And omega theta will be also the same. And it's going to be j squared, mass of the sun squared, mass cubed, jr plus j theta cubed. That's it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And you notice that since you have this, these are the same.
Yes, they are the same.
And because you have just this combination of the sum of jr and j theta. And so this is an example of a degenerate or, I guess, resonant system. It's always resonant because omega r is always involved with omega theta.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Perfect. And yes, I think you could also do this with some like introducing sine and cosine of.
Or you can simply use a program and it will do it for you.
That's how people do it these days. How the kids do it.
Yeah.
You couldn't do that in all. But yes, good. Perfect. Thank you. Thanks, Hassan. So everybody is happy with this? I think actually when I used to do these integrals, I didn't know how to do counter integral. So I think counter integral is a simpler way of doing it, which guys I guess nowadays maybe I should teach. Thanks for that. So you can imagine if you just imaginary part of R and real part of R.
There are two points where this vanishes, and there will be a branch cut that connects these guys. So the integral you have is basically kind of goes around like this, right? And I guess this part is fine because this goes to zero. So, I mean, if you're above or below, it doesn't make a difference because the argument goes to zero. And here, these two don't cancel each other because as you go across the branch cut, it changes sign, a square root changes sign. So this is what you want, but then you could there is no other pole anywhere else, so you can take this to infinity. And if you take this to infinity, then what do you have? If R goes to infinity, you get, okay, now I look at it, I don't see. You do see a pole, huh? Right. Okay, if R is big, then you can Taylor expand this, and there would be a 1 over R term, which is this one, this term. Right. If you Taylor expand this for large R's. Everything else would be zero. Right. That, because the only thing that gives you non-zero is the 1 over R term, because the integral of that is log. Everything else would be, its integral along the cycle would be zero. So this term would be basically all that matters, I guess. Right. Cool. Well, right. Well, somehow P theta comes out as well. So how does P theta come out if that term is the only one that matters? R goes to infinity. No, but this is 1 over R squared. So how is that? So if R goes to infinity,
but it's all
well, no, but I mean, if R goes to infinity, this term is much smaller than this.
No,
oh, right. Okay, you're right. There is something happening at zero as well, right? So at zero, is it a simple pole at zero? If R go, yes, you're right. Right. Okay. There is another, but you're right. At zero, there is this other pole. Right, yep.
I'm not really familiar with contour integrals.
Yeah, so you don't have to do it then.
So
yeah.
What are these poles? Are they like where the integrand flows up?
So, right, absolutely. But not any singular, the one that could look like 1 over R. 1 over R minus R naught, or 1 over X minus X naught. So, yeah. Right, absolutely. So it's essentially like Taylor expansion. So what you do is that you look at your function, see whether anywhere it goes to infinity, and then expand it around where it goes to infinity. And here, at R equal to 0, it goes to infinity, right? So at R equal to 0, the biggest term is this guy. So then it looks like a square root of P theta squared over R squared, which is, I guess, I times P theta over R. And then the interesting thing then is around that, integral of dr over R is a log, right? And
Mm-hmm. So that's where you get that simple pole that blows up.
So that is that true? So this has a pole at infinity as well?
Is
if R goes to
pole of order 2.
Okay, but that doesn't
make the change of variables, R
okay.
Is one over set, okay?
Mm-hmm.
R is equal to 1 over set. Then you will have
okay.
You can rewrite that as a
okay.
Set square plus
mm-hmm.
times the square root.
Okay.
That's going to be some set, so that R squared is going to be set square.
Okay, but why do you have to do? Okay, so you're saying you don't do the integral in terms of these variables. You do it in terms of different 1 over R. Okay. So that would be a different way of doing it. So then, of course, then this pole that I put here would go to infinity. I'm not sure which one is a better way of doing this.
The only thing is, doesn't the
sum of all poles in a on C infinity equals zero? Like for any function, we'll have all their poles being zero. Oh, I guess it has to be meromorphic, which this is logarithmic.
No, that's if it doesn't have any pole, I guess maybe that. Yeah, I'm not quite sure what you're talking about. But yeah, so the point is that if you have a 1 over R, then, so I guess there are two things, that you can always deform these contours and the integral doesn't change, except that they cannot cross the poles or branch cuts or poles. And the idea is that around the pole, the integral is just a log, and then you can take it analytically, it's just 2 pi times whatever sits on top. And around branch cuts, though, it's a difficult. It depends on what you're interested in. I guess in this case, integral around a branch cut is actually what we want. So that's there. So the trick in all of this is that you have to deform your contour. You start from the integral you want, and then try to make a closed contour, and then deform it in a way that makes it simpler. Right. So that's the idea. OK, good. I guess we haven't actually done that, but I suppose if you do it, you get the right answer.
Okay.
It worked. Perfect.
So I think that's the second part. You can, but I want to give others an opportunity. Great.
Okay. So should I go up or down for the boards?
So the trick would be that now you could push that one up, the one that's already written on, and then pull the one on top down.
Yeah.
So that you can still see. I mean, if somebody wants to take notes, I don't think it matters very much now. So this is a trick to have maximal time.
Okay, for the second part, we have to perturb our Hamiltonian that we got in the first part by what happens when Jupiter's gravity now acts on the asteroid. So our Hamiltonian is just going to be our original Hamiltonian plus some perturbation. And so then But we also want to do this for circular orbits, which simplifies stuff a lot in the end. So our new Hamiltonian is just going to be PR squared over 2m plus P theta squared over 2mr minus gm sun over r minus g and Jupiter m over square root of radius of Jupiter squared plus the radius of the asteroid squared minus twice essentially the cosine law. Let's call this gamma.
And 2m r squared from the p theta squared term.
Here? R squared? Yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. Okay, now this gamma is just. I can just write this again. So you have your two orbits. Your asteroid is here, and then Jupiter is here. I think that's right, symbol, right? The Jupiter?
I think so.
So, okay. Right. So. Actually, I showed this opposite. So here's the asteroid. If you draw this at these angles from the sun, and then say this is where Earth is, so we measure the angle from Earth, so to speak, this axis is always fixed. So then you have this is the angle of the asteroid,
And then this is the angle of Jupiter. And then so gamma is just the difference between those. So that would be the J omega.
Or the other way, I think.
Does it actually though?
No, cosine is.
Yeah, cosine is symmetric.
Cosine is agnostic to that. All right, so then once you have these angles, you can also express these angles. So theta is going to be the orbital frequency times some sort of time it takes. So that'll come in. That'll be useful later. So now.
Is that both thetas or just one of those?
This is just in general, or any angle, orbital angle.
That's assuming constant.
Well, yeah.
Omega is constant.
Yeah.
Do you expect it to be constant?
Well, it's circular.
Jupiter.
Well, this is unperturbed right now.
Okay.
We're going
to. Okay, at unperturbed level, that's.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So then this simplifies a lot when you have circular orbits. Essentially, PR goes away. So this is equal to JR equals 0 for circular orbits. So our Hamiltonian, or it's just going to be essentially. These terms, and I think that go away too. No, that stays. Or does it? What do I have? Okay, well, in any case, it's just going to be g squared m sum squared m squared or m cubed over 2 j squared theta. Minus g mj m squared over.
Why is it m squared?
Here?
Because there you have it as m, not m squared. So it's m, not m
squared. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, but this is.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is there. Yes, there.
Yeah, this is a 2 there. And this is r squared minus 2rjr cosine omega a minus omega j t.
Shouldn't I be reading negative?
Say it again?
Shouldn't there be a reading?
What is leading it?
Like there's like a negative sign in front.
Oh, yeah. For the Hamiltonian, yes.
The energy is negative.
Right, that's
true.
Because it's bounded, so it has to be negative.
The energy
is that
bound
it's,
objects
that's
is negative.
From here, right?
If you're taking the minimum of the potential to have the circular orbit, right?
Okay.
And so, yeah, it's a negative value. Otherwise, if you had greater than 0, you'd have more than the potential, then so you'd be unbounded. So it has to be negative. No, just the first one. Second one is negative.
That's okay. Yeah. All right.
So then the question is about that omega t that you got down there. So should you have omega t?
Because
now it's a perturbed Hamiltonian.
Yes, it is the perturbed Hamiltonian. I guess.
Since gamma is there, right?
But gamma is theta minus theta j, right?
And every angle of them is a frequency times time, right?
So yeah, shouldn't this be delta omega? So this is.
Not for the perturbed one.
Isn't it that? Can't you write it like this, where this is the perturbed?
No, but. Right, so remember, so what is Hamiltonian? Hamiltonian is supposed to be in terms of action, action variables, right?
Yeah.
So that's the unperturbed Hamiltonian. Now you're adding the perturbation. And it's a time-dependent perturbation.
So, so now that doesn't have to be a function of action anymore. But still, it has to be, Hamiltonian has to be functions of positions and momenta, and angle is the position conjugate to j theta. So, so let's put it another way. Dh, so is j not conserved? Is angular momentum not conserved?
Oh, okay. So, I guess, right. So, dh. Right, is this?
Right, so that.
Is that equal to zero?
No, that doesn't, but that wasn't zero to begin with, right? That was theta dot.
No,
oh,
it's the other one.
Right.
It's minus dh
yeah.
dy theta.
Dh dy theta.
Right, so should it be zero?
No.
Because that is this is
no,
fast.
Because it depends on theta.
Okay, good. So that's the point. So that's why you should keep the theta dependence there in the Hamiltonian. Right?
Okay, keep theta here.
Right.
Also, if you...
But there, if he considers omega theta as...
You can write omega j theta.
But, so this is not an integrable system anymore because you've added time-dependent perturbations to it. So the idea is that you start from an integrable system, but then you add perturbations, and in this case, time-dependent perturbations. So the actions don't have to be conserved anymore.
Well, wasn't there a theorem that says if you perturb it, oh wait, time dependence is
that's
theory.
Right. This is time dependent perturbation. Okay, good. So that's good. So now this is the well-defined Hamiltonian. It depends both on theta and j. So it means that j is not, even though it was conserved at the level of amplitude Hamiltonian with the perturbation, it's not conserved. It just says that Jupiter breaks that spherical symmetry, so the angular momentum is not conserved anymore for the
okay.
Asteroid.
I'm sorry, I'm somewhat
yeah.
convinced with that
mm-hmm.
keeping theta as theta, not transforming it as a function at
mm-hmm.
G theta.
Mm-hmm.
So if we write theta as a frequency wall omega times t, and then we express omega from the first as an omega theta there, and
yeah, but the question is, why should theta be omega times t? And that was the case for the unperturbed Hamiltonian. Now,
because the reason why it worked there is that theta cyclic, so theta dot was going to be constant.
Yeah.
But here it's no longer constant because it is explicitly dependent on theta. We have a theta dependent.
But I'm not sure then that we can keep j theta there.
Why not?
Why we can do that?
So what should we do with j theta?
Well, j theta would be the same thing as we're computing a.
And theta dot r squared?
Because in a we assume it as a conserved quantity, and
mm-hmm.
now we change Hamiltonian.
Good. So that's the choice of definition. Now I think that is a confusing point.
Another way, well, if you rather using action angle, use the Hamilton Jacobi equations to use the principal formulation,
uh-huh.
you get basically you add it, you can write it as theta is equal to omega naught t, being the omega over there, plus some
perfect.
Constant beta, and under the perturbed system, that beta is not constant anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can still have the nice omega t. Omega naught minus omega jt, but then you get plus beta, which it is a non-constant anymore, so that it...
That would be a different way of doing that, I suppose, yeah. But I guess the point is that when you're adding time-dependent perturbations, then action on angle variable lose their basic unique definition, right? Because you have... There was a unique definition for a static system that basically you have... integrals of motion, and then if you have two integrals of motion, then you can redefine them in terms of action variables that have this property, that integral of PR, DR is JR, integral of PR, is JR. Now that you have time-dependent system, you don't have integrals of motion anymore. So it's now it's up to you to define J theta however you want. So we can just say it's angular momentum. Right, even though it's not conservative.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So it's tricky denotation. It should be like E theta.
So J theta is not an action variable.
Well, right, so it used to be an action variable, but it's not an action variable. It's not just P theta, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's certainly one way. So it's not a concert quantity anymore, right? If that makes sense. But, so this is now this is your perturbed action, and of course the idea would be this is small perturbation. So that's
that's the final answer.
And I mean, you can see this is just the torque. If it's correct, it should be just the torque formula, right? Dh by d theta must be j theta dot, which is torque. Is that correct? Can you see that that's correct or not?
But j theta doesn't depend on theta. It depends on theta dot.
Right, so now you have to, so to calculate j theta dot, you have to calculate ds by d theta, the one that's the thing you wrote down, right?
Yeah.
So is that equal to the torque? I mean, can you see just, if you take the derivative respect to theta? Is that equivalent to what you call the torque in Newtonian mechanics?
So the torque is the change in angular velocity.
Right, angular momentum, right? And it's R cross F, right?
Yeah.
So that
so you take this derivative, this turns into a force times R, right?
Yeah. And it would have the cross product on
it. Yeah, I think well it should. presumably
when they're parallel it disappears because I have a sign here.
That's right. So if theta is equal to omega t, then there is no torque. So that is because the cosine has zero derivative there at the origin. Right? Then theta is equal. So this, I think this, I mean, I'm pretty sure this has the right property. This is equivalent to torque. So right. So the action angle variable in this formalism, the way we look at it, is just. The Hamilton equations are equivalent to that, what you wrote down. L dot is the R cross F.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. So that was it, right? That was part two. Thank you, Greg. So number three, that's the big one. So who's the bravest amongst you?
I mean, I can lead the thinking.
good.
The thinking breaks down very fast.
Okay. Don't worry, we're gonna help you.
Well, thank you.
You're not the only one confused about this. So to be honest, so I came up with this question when I was visiting Beijing, and it was like late night. I had to submit the question, so I didn't think very thoroughly about whether there's a good answer to it. But that's
okay. I'm going to read the question. So in the figures, we have the Kirkwood gaps that show the distribution of orbital periods of asteroids due to the resonance with Jupiter. So the problem is to estimate how wide these gaps are for a generic resonance. So OK, the situation is as follows. We have the sun here, we have an asteroid, and then we have Jupiter. Yeah? Every time the asteroid goes near Jupiter, its velocity gets a key. Yeah. If they never encounter each other close again, the key would be like settled down again by the motion around the sun. So in order for this situation, be periodically, so we get peaks and peaks and peaks. These two things need to be resonant, right? So how we say that? Well, if we have the PA is the period of the asteroid around the sun, and PJ is the period of Jupiter around the sun, those things have to be related like that. So what it means is like n times this go around the sun, and this go n times around the sun, and they encounter each other again. So in every of these situations, asteroid will get a kick. Right? So now we need to compute. So we need to find what would be the time scale for this resonance. So we're going to say, as we define time scales, that we would like this time scale to be equal to the time that takes for the velocity to change order of magnitude of the initial velocity. Right? So we're going to say T resonant is equal to the time that went by for the asteroid to change the velocity of order VA. And so, wait, I'm lost with my, yeah. So delta V times the number of peaks during this period of time, it has to be of the order of VA. That's everything we say. Like the asteroid around the sun. What's the number of peaks? Well, the number of peaks would be T resonance divided by T meet. What is T meet? Is the time that it takes to this guy to encounter each other again. And that is actually this. Right? So delta V, T res over T meet, has to be of order of VA.
So the only hesitation I hear is T meet isn't, like, they'll encounter each other along the way, even if, like, more often than that. Because, like, even if this goes around once, this thing will go around twice and we'll meet it about on the other side.
Would they?
Yeah. Because this one's going faster. So it would overcome the difference, like the theta difference would.
How did you write it? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, so like the only way I see this is that this is how T meets more so how long it'll take to return back to the initial alignment. Like, so, like, they'll be aligned at to a fixed angle once every T meet, because, like, they both have to go N and M periods, respectively, around the entire thing within that period. And if you don't have an integer ratio, or, like, a rational ratio, then you'll never get that sync again, so you'll always get, like, a little offset overall, and you won't get to a resonance.
But what's bad in that? Because if they meet each other, I mean, it could be right.
No.
There's nothing wrong
right,
in that.
But the interpretation of what the number means is different.
So meet is a directional thing. It's not. I guess that's kind of what Mike is saying. That's the implication of what Mike is saying. Just meeting is not enough. You have to constructively meet each other, which means that.
You're unsatisfied with my word.
It's more so the interpretation of like what you're saying.
They meet each other more often. Like every time this goes around, Astro goes around the path.
Well, but if they meet each other more often, like the thing will get a kick more often.
But in different directions, right?
Yeah.
So that's the thing. So you keep, every time it goes, Astro goes around, it gets a kick,
okay.
But then it kicks a different direction. So, but then at every T tilde, it gets the kick in the same direction.
Okay.
Right. So that's the thing. So these kicks are directional. These are vectors.
Well, those kicks are directional, and they're different directions only in like Cartesian coordinates, right?
That's the kick is a vector, right? So it's
yeah.
So, but if you do it radially, it's always kicked in the same direction.
Yes.
But that's not the... But, so here's a situation that could happen, is that if Jupiter's lagging behind the asteroid, the asteroid's having to continually overcome that potential and see if it's, like, losing energy to Jupiter.
Yeah.
So that's a, like, we don't want that situation. We want a thing where it's coming to it, so it's gaining that potential, and then it's getting kicked out, so that it's losing it for less time because it's now traveling faster, as a, will spend less time in that lower, at that higher acceleration rate. Because as it gets closer, the acceleration gets higher. Like, energetically, this doesn't make sense, but in terms of acceleration.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's going to happen.
I mean,
so
I don't see why
do
they
meet
out there,
yeah.
So it will be changing another.
Oh, yeah, like,
it would always get a kick, like, kick and kick, like, always in theta direction. I don't see how it's going to be
no,
the other.
How is the kick is in the theta direction, or is it in the theta direction?
I mean,
well,
the kick is always like, it's always like that, no?
The kick will always get,
I mean, it will
no
be
like, change.
It's not going to change from the other, so I don't think there's a difference. Like, if it gets kicked, it's not going to change it or jump from the orbit. So that's not radio. It's going to be
well,
tangential.
Yeah. Well, it's going
yeah,
to be
that's
radio.
That's what I'm saying.
Now,
like,
but the reason why it has to be a rational ratio is that you don't want situations where it's... well, if you don't have a rational ratio, you'll get basically, on average, the same amount of loss as you do gain. Because, like, it
well, that's
be,
what that's what I'm actually saying. Like, in order to have,
not,
you
I'm
want
not,
to do
I'm,
the problem.
No,
okay.
I'm not disagreeing with your numbers.
Oh,
just
cool.
Disagreeing with the interpretation.
Okay, so.
Okay, so let's get to the
so
the
this
distance.
Right. So we have this formula here. We need now to compute delta b. And that's where my problem comes. Okay, so delta V, imagine this situation here, right? That the asteroid is coming, and then here start feeling very strongly the potential of Jupiter, and then it's gonna get the kick, and here we'll start like not seeing it again. Yeah, so the way I think about it is during this fraction of the period, it will feel Jupiter's the strongest.
Mm-hmm.
So delta B will be, so we can think it as acceleration times the time. It will be seeing Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
So the acceleration in this case will be given by the gravitational force, so it's G and Jupiter. Over R, this is asteroid Jupiter.
Right.
Square. And here we have to put a delta T. And a delta T would be like period of A over some number, like A.
Okay.
It's just this, it's a fraction
okay.
of the period.
Sure.
Right? So. Now we can use all these things here. And we have the G, R. That's delta V, the number of peaks is T resonance over T field. I don't know why we think that is. I'm here. Okay, and now this PA is proportional to T tilde.
Mm-hmm.
So PA is T tilde. Over n,
okay.
So So G and R squared. And it has to be of order VA.
Mm-hmm.
So now T rex is okay.
And you just ignore the N and A because actually they're just like this.
Order one, yeah.
Yeah, so you can say like it's order one. And just omit it. But
okay.
So sorry, what was your interpretation of what T-res is?
T-res?
It's the cumulative time for the resonance to change the velocity by order the velocity.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, but
sorry,
I thought you had said something different than what Kurt had just said. And I would agree with Kurt. So is that what you think it is?
Yes.
Okay.
Good. Everybody is
conceptually,
very dramatic.
Conceptually, this problem is midlife.
I actually have a question.
Sure.
When you make the question for the assignment, well, what was the idea for? Was it the same idea as she interpreted?
Well, I think I want a solution to it. Maybe that you saw the solution. It looks kind of like this, and which is online for the previous course. I don't know. Is that how you saw this? Or, right. Okay.
I mean, we all discussed it yesterday.
Right. So that sounds familiar. I'm not convinced that this is correct, but I mean, we can discuss and see whether. And I think just now that we have that Hamiltonian, there's a probably more systematic way of doing it, and we see whether it reproduces.
So I actually looked at that Hamiltonian and was looking at it as a L dot. I did a little bit extra on question two. And so it was like L dot, if you say take a time average over one period, delta L is zero.
Right. So that's the key thing, right? So that's the tricky thing about this, that the first order this is zero.
Yeah, and so
and that you can already see that why, because the average of torque is zero, right? Because the orbits are symmetric.
Even in resonance.
Right.
I thought about it and then went with, so if you go halfway around, so like from in phase to anti phase, you get a little bit of kick, and so if you interpret it as that will then change your R, and then your kick will then change by a little bit. It gives obviously something different then, but then R increases as it goes from in phase to out of phase, which doesn't make sense to me.
All right, by the way, there is something I noticed that, so you don't have that in terms of J theta. R is written in terms of J theta there, right?
Yes, R can be written in terms of J theta.
Right, okay, so that's actually one thing I just noticed that. So R should be written in terms of J theta for that Hamiltonian, because Hamiltonian needs to be just a function of theta and J theta, right? All of these two. Okay, good. So let's discuss. So is that your result?
No.
No, okay, that's not your result.
That's one part of it that is computing the time scale of the resonance.
So it seems that I think that the philosophy, I'm not 100% sure it's wrong, but I think there might be, I'd be more convinced if there's a different way of, just starting from that Hamiltonian, there's a mathematical group that gives you something of that order. So physically, I think that makes sense, and it's just the idea is that every time you are in resonance, you get a kick, and these things should add up, because it's a resonance orbit, this should add up coherently on top of it.
The only thing that I see there, looking at that Hamiltonian, I see no reason a priori why having theta, omega theta and omega j being resonant is actually going to do something.
Okay, so let's do this. Shall I, sh- d-
Do you want me to try it? Do you want to, maybe you said you've done it. So, okay, so why don't you just write down the hand contrast? Pass that and pass that. So, we might come back to you, but. So we're gonna try this other way and see whether that works better.
So, I've reformulated the Hamiltonian with the mic.
The mic is there. Mic, get the mic. So, I guess R needs to be in terms of J for this to make sense.
For me, I don't need it. And for mine,
okay,
because.
Maybe. But let's see.
I'm more interested in di H, di beta, or
but
beta.
But I think that's the key. I think you need both of them if you want to do it correctly. Okay, so go ahead.
So I have that so S being my principal Hamiltonian function. For the case where
is that ET?
Yes. For the case where P R equals zero, I have this.
S is your Hamilton. No, sorry, but what is
S is the so this is
basically
the principal Hamiltonian function for the Hamilton Jacobi.
Okay.
Basically, the change of coordinates.
Okay. But this, we have two M's there. We have M's.
So, I took a little different convention.
That's okay, so that's mu and n.
Yeah.
So your mu is, maybe you want to make it a bit longer on one side than the short, so that is.
Sorry.
Well, still like m. So, this is how I would write mu.
Mu starts with a long line that's small.
This is my mu.
Exactly. Good. Anyways, so di S by di L is equal to beta some constant in terms of this formulation. So eventually gets you that basically beta plus or minus m squared mu cubed g squared over L cubed. So you can identify this as omega naught,
mm-hmm.
And so.
So it's just reproducing, but.
Yeah, more or less this is just reproducing. So it's just get you theta is equal to omega naught t plus theta, where in the unperturbed case, omega naught and beta are constants.
Mm-hmm.
So writing that back into the perturbed one, so epsilon just the perturbation factor. And so beta and L are conjugate of position and momentum to each other. So L dot is equal to.
But I think you're kind of, you're just reproducing the equation that you have.
Well, yes, but this gives, in terms of beta, and so here we can hold this constant, and we can treat this as the changing factor, and so gets you epsilon.
Sorry, may I ask
what
I'm trying to do?
Well, trying to solve this, I was hoping that Mike would solve the equation of theta dot is, sorry, j dot is ds by d theta, so.
So this gives, I'll just write it out and then we'll see. Maybe it's not, maybe it's not what you want.
Theta, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Be dh by d theta.
Dh by d theta is j dot, right? By the, that by definition. So.
But I don't think that would be
just
j dot.
It's not j dot?
I don't think so.
Why
not? I haven't done
the calculation. No, that's the definition of j dot. So, by definition. So, but I'm not sure if that's what you're, okay, that's what you get. So, you have dh by d beta,
yeah,
which is. Okay, it's similar to that up there.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's what you got. So that's what I'm not 100% sure. So beta is supposed to be a constant or not?
So beta, in the unperturbed case, is
right.
Constant. So the entire Hamiltonian would be in terms of
right.
Constants, j's, and betas.
But for the perturbed Hamiltonian.
But the perturbed
is
non-constant. And if you took the L derivative of this,
yeah.
With respect, like you'd have to express R in terms of L there.
That's right.
Then you would get beta dot.
That's right. And I think that's what's important to get there.
I would imagine the change in L is the leading.
Right, but you see the leading thing is zero on average, right? Because
yeah.
The sine of beta. So if you integrate along the orbit, average mm-hmm. integral over sine is. You don't even have to write it down. You say you're calculating dx by d beta, but then you're integrating over time,
yeah.
Which is basically undoing the derivative. So
yeah.
As long as you have a closed orbit, then this is going to be zero. So that's okay. So, but do you want to write it down, or do you want to maybe write it in terms of theta? So that's or I guess it doesn't matter. Beta is fine.
Yeah.
Beta is like delta theta.
So yeah, this is
beta
just
is perturbations over the unperturbed angle.
So
this
have,
is L dot.
Yeah, this is L dot, and I haven't expressed epsilon dot or a beta dot. But I suppose if it's important there, it would just blow up everything. So yes, I could see how that's important. But I don't have that explicitly calculated.
So, but how would you go about calculating?
So beta dot would just be.
Right.
It's not H epsilon.
Okay.
It's H epsilon, right. And H epsilon is what? Is the perturbed Hamiltonian?
It is the perturbed Hamiltonian under my notation.
No, I think basically that you should subtract omega naught from it. That it should be just the effect of perturbation. I mean, if it wasn't for the perturbation, beta dot would be zero.
Yeah.
Okay.
The energy term, when you if you express the energy term, would cancel this term. Exactly.
Okay.
Like in the unperturbed case, this is exactly zero.
Right.
So H epsilon is just a perturbation term for Hamiltonian.
Yeah. So really, it's this is this. You could express this as this, kill this term, and then it's just this. Because in L beta coordinates, H is exactly zero.
So could you just, I mean, skim the term that, not maybe not exactly, but I mean, so, I mean, you have H in terms of L.
Yeah.
Or delta H.
So, okay. So
just take the derivative.
Sure. So
I guess it's in terms of R, but
the R derivatives are the only thing that really matters. So I guess, so what was R in terms of this again? I think it's on the other sheet.
R in terms of L?
Yeah.
It's somewhere, I think it's also notes.
No,
isn't it on this?
Oh,
okay.
It's on both sides.
Oh, okay.
Just,
No, I don't think anything is released underneath.
Yeah, it's
under.
Yeah, sorry.
So maybe you can use another board if it's getting too messy.
Yeah,
let's see, we should try to wrap up in 5 minutes.
That's reasonable for R.
That
L squared over
that looks reasonable.
Yeah, M over G.
Looks reasonable.
No, I thought you were looking for the first expression.
No. Okay, so I guess to just make the calculation later easier. So di R by di L is then equal to just
M U G.
What
is beta dot now?
So was there times R minus 2 plus omega naught so that we would have this has a R to the L to the 4 term here. This would have the L term in the numerator. Oh, the squared term. So it would this it would grow as a fact. It would be 1 over L in terms of how it grows. Beta, how beta grows.
I don't think that matters too much. So there is a beta dot there, okay? So that's it.
Yeah, that's what beta dot is, yeah.
So now the question is, can we find, so if you assume beta was constant, or zero, let's say, then this integral of L dot is zero. Now it's not constant, it's this guy.
Yes.
So how would we calculate how much L changes in one period?
So would it just be set beta as beta naught plus beta dot t as a first order correction to the change, and then
is beta not constant?
Well, not. Well, it would be in terms of l's.
Mm-hmm.
It varies l.
And so maybe I'll try to just see wrap it up. Thanks, Mike.
I don't see.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to find something simpler.
I think you're right. We can discuss this more next time, although I guess we're not going to discuss next assignment.
But that one is easy. Not quite as
hard as this one. OK, so good. So I guess my only point is that this was the question you have, which is the question that you have, which I guess is equivalent of this guy, right? J dot big, J theta dot big, really being equal to this, right? And what we want is to find how much J theta changes, which is integral dt of partial h by partial theta, or which is the same as what you have is dh by d theta. This is delta J theta. And the problem is that if you assume theta dot is constant, then this would be zero, right? Because this dt would be proportional to d theta, and then this integral would be just delta h, but in a closed orbit. This would be zero. But if that's not the case, then I can put the divide by d theta here, divide by d theta, right? And okay, and then this guy, so this is integral d theta, dh by d theta, and this is 1 over omega naught, 1 over omega, which is omega asteroid, plus perturbations, which I guess is beta dot, or I can call it delta omega, or beta dot, I guess it's the same as that's up here, right? And this is a function of theta as well. Okay. So, so if I Taylor expand this, it will be d theta, dh by d theta. There's 1 over omega a that comes out. And the bleeding term would be 1 minus beta dot divided by omega a, the function of beta. Right? Right. And so the first term vanishes in closed orbit. The second term, I don't think it does has to vanish. And that's the first question, that whether it does vanish or not. I don't think it vanishes a second. I guess there's a minus sign, and then there is integral d theta of dh by d theta times this guy, beta dot.
Maybe another minus sign as well, because l dot is equal to minus di h di theta.
Right. You're right. There was a minus sign up there.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. There's a minus sign up there. Okay. And then beta dot is what you've got up here. So I'm not 100% sure whether we can do this online, did this integral online. Well, maybe you can. Has an interesting structure, right? So it's h beta dot, yes, because it's d theta and then dh by d theta. So this integral, I guess it's just the next tactic is to do this integral and see whether we get something similar to what's up there. So this integral is d theta, dh by d theta is something we have here, in this guy.
No, sorry, this guy. And then beta dot is this guy.
Right.
And okay. So let's try, maybe how about this? Let's try to do this next time. Actually do this integral and see what we get.
Actually, we were hoping to ask you about the fourth question of the fifth sign.
Okay.
Because like there were like three conditions to form a star, and one of them is entirely bound. We discussed this like a long time yesterday.
Okay.
We couldn't find what's tidally bound.
But tidally bound means?
We have a black hole, then we have a sphere,
right,
where we have stars, and then we have a gas cloud, a spherical gas cloud outside,
mm-hmm,
that is like a sphere from the outside. And then we're hoping that the gas cloud is going to collapse into a star or form a star.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we do tidally bound?
So tidally bound is the tidal effect of the black hole. The tidal gravity, tidal force from the black hole should be less than the self gravity of the cloud. Right.
Okay. Is it okay if we submit the fourth question a bit late? Like,
because
sure.
We didn't
submit it.
Okay. So I mean, we haven't discussed it. So you have until next time, until when you discuss it, right?
Okay.
So tidally bound. You said the self gravity of the gas cloud is greater than the
tidal force
of the black hole.
That's right.
So in the second part of the question, we calculated the radius of the sphere of influence of the black
hole.
That's
right.
So how does that relate to the tidal force?
Not directly, because the spherical influence has to do with the velocity dispersion of the stars,
yeah,
right? So that's an external thing. That's a wind. When does the distribution of the stars notice where the black hole is? Basically, it's where kinetic energy of the stars is comparable to the potential, gravitational potential energy.
Okay.
But then the tidal effect has to do with the size of the object.
So
if something is small, there's a small tidal force on it, if it's something big. So that's an internal effect.
Doesn't also the tidal force depend on the position relative to the black hole?
Right, that's exactly. So that's that. Yeah, it does depend on the cloud, but it also depends on the size of the cloud.
Yeah,
right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So it's the gradient of the force times the size of the cloud.
Our parameters there was mass and radius of the star, right? The
no, but you also have already calculated the sphere of influence. So I said this calculation is at the sphere of influence.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Good. So let's try to work this out. I mean, this way. Through that route and see whether we can get an answer that's not zero.
I also have a question about the sixth assignment.
Okay.
We've
already seen it, right?
Is it?
It's online, yeah. Okay. Was that the question?
No, I was actually asking if you put it online.
Yes, I put it online, yes.
Okay.
I put both six and seven assignment, actually. Okay, thank you.
Even in these equations, I don't see why resonance does anything.
No, I think the resonance has to do with the fact that you're multiplying some functions of sine and cosine. And they generically, if you just multiply them and average over and integrate over time, they would be zero, unless you have the right factors,
or
right frequency.
So yeah, I guess if they kill each other in the integral or from like their addition.
Right. So I mean the other possibility is that somehow this I think this is gonna work, but if it doesn't work then the problem is maybe the assumption of circular orbit is
because I think it might be easier to do this if you don't assume circular orbits, because then because the idea of like changing if you burn like if you have a rocket an elliptical orbit and you burn radially, you're not going to change the radius of your, the semi-major axis of your orbit. You're just going to shift sort of like the ellipse around
right.
the very center. And it, isn't that what's really going on?
Maybe, yeah. In the sense of this cancellation, if you have an ellipse, it doesn't happen because you don't have a symmetry. So.
Well, yeah.
And I also suppose that if it's elliptical, you'll have, if it's resonant, you'll get these times when the asteroid gets even closer to Jupiter because of it.
Well,
it could get closer or farther.
Not
like,
or farther.
Yeah, so it depends on.
Well, so it's actually like cool things that happen when you get elliptical orbits. Because if you have like the sun here and then Jupiter around here, say Jupiter's here, you get a group of asteroids here and a group of asteroids here, and then you actually form like this weird.
Right, so that's the one to one resonance.
Yeah.
Right, I think that's,
so,
that's
so, so
a little bit.
You have like the asteroids. You know, it's elliptical, like, here and here, but in any case, like, you get higher populations in this triangle.
Isn't that just, like, collections because of Lagrange?
Those are Lagrange points.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, these are the Lagrange points, but this stuff here isn't Lagrange points.
Okay.
Yeah, those are done, though.
I think that's what this is. Yeah.
I don't think it's not supposed to be here, because there's people around the sun that probably appropriate for them there. Because, I mean, there isn't these core orbits in Jupiter that they have a the center.
Oh, yes.
But then anywhere else, you don't have a center.
Well, so this triangle has two core orbits in the rotates.
Right. When I say these points, I guess this is also, but actually, I guess.